Dismantled, a podcast inciting curiosity, inspiring truth, and modeling deliberate space taking on personal, social, and historical issues for people of the sun, the displaced diaspora, lifting love, discourse, solidarity, and liberation.
Welcome, everyone, to our next episode of Dismantled. We have 3 out of 4 dismantalistas in today. We're going to shout out Marquita, who is visiting family.
We miss you, Marquita.
We miss you. I just go through introductions right now. I'm Cynthia.
I'm Maria Cristina.
This is Asia.
And we're here to think and talk with all of you all about accessing higher education, the experiences that we've had. And as usual, before we go into our main stories, our main topics, we're going to do our calling and sort of call in the energies or the people that we want to be present in the room. I'm going to go ahead and start. I want to call in my dad, Guillermo Martinez, who, you know, I haven't really spoken a lot about him, but you know, speaking of higher education, I think he was one of my main advocates towards gaining a higher education and was always down for me as a young woman, as a woman, and being able to be, autonomous, economically autonomous too. Like always saying, if you get married and it doesn't work out, get a divorce and be able to support yourself. You know, so he's always been down for me as a woman. And I think that that's really powerful given that he's a Latinx man, an immigrant man. And so shouting you out, Dad.
I'll call in my maternal grandfather, Papa. I think he went to college for a year at Xavier University in Louisiana, which is an HBCU. And then I think he just went for that 1 year and then moved to California. But I think that he really instilled in my family, like, you know, that higher education is accessible and it's also not necessary. Mm-hmm. He went on to become a contractor and like did construction and did really well, like in Los Angeles, as a contractor. And he was just always about us, like he's getting our money and doing what we want to do. Mm-hmm. Just being happy and successful in the way that works for us. So I appreciate knowing that about him, that he did, you know, he tried it out. He tried college out back in whenever that was, mm-hmm. in the 30s or 40s. And then he found something that he really loved and was really successful. And like, him and my grandma have like a really strong lineage, I think, of children and grandchildren who are kind of finding their ways in different ways. So I'll call in Papa today.
Thank you.
Well, I am going to call my mom today. And, I think we probably, the three of us, are looking back into our ancestry in a way. Yes. To see like where this idea of higher education comes from, right, for all of us.
Yeah.
Primarily from our families. And I want to call in my mom because she definitely was the person that put that grain in there, you know, of that seed of the that value of, mm-hmm. really going and take and getting educated and going to college and getting go to higher education. And I remember her stories. My mom was she grew up in a small town in the middle of the island of Puerto Rico, and she decided, and with the help of my grandparents, to go to college. And the University of Puerto Rico, the main campus, is in the city. It's in the metropolitan area. So from very little, I would hear the stories of my mom's journey to be able to go to the university and you know, the trip from the little town in Naranjito back in the day, you know, the, you know, hours to get to the city in the, on Sunday nights, and then spend the week there and then come back on the weekends, and, you know, living in these like tiny homes, sharing with, you know, 10 other students, women students in a house where only women were allowed to live. And like, they call them hospedajes, you know, in Puerto Rico. And her like sewing her own clothes so she could have like clothes to go to the university. And so like all these stories around the challenges that are there, you know, for all of us to really be able to reach to these spaces and be admitted and be part of these spaces, and then the sacrifices that are made around that and that she made, and then that even but continue to, you know, carve that in both me and my sister. So I wanna call in my mom for just putting that energy there. And also today's her birthday as well.
Oh, happy birthday.
So,
happy birthday.
I know. So my mom Edna,
happy birthday.
Yeah, happy
Edna.
Birthday. Yeah.
So we called in our mommy, our papa, and our poppy. That's cool. All right, ladies, thank you so much, and thanks for those great stories. I think they make a really big difference. Let's go into our moment of triumph, our moment of victory, or a moment of a challenging moment this week, or a moment that you feel maybe started off as a challenge and then moved into something that, you know, you could sort of grow from. It's hard to think back sometimes. I think sometimes I'm in the moment and I'm like, this is what I'm going to talk about. And then I come here and I'm like, wait, what was I going to say about this? I think that, do you guys mind if I start? Okay. For me, this week was challenging for other reasons. I'm coming up, I think I keep talking about this because I am essentially terminating with families and sort of thinking about, you know, what the future is going to look like within academia, now working in academia. And I've been really scared and like really stressed out. And my supervisor noticed that I've been biting my nails all the way down. It's like biting my fingers, basically. And which was like very sad to know that he could read me that easily when I was talking to him about cases. And, you know, we talk about also future work, and I think that it's starting to become a reality that a place that I didn't necessarily feel completely welcome to or at home in classrooms as an undergraduate student, a really scared little person, because I, you know, I was so young and I didn't realize the impact until, you know, as I aged, of like what a difficult challenge it was to get through it. I guess I just sort of watched my friends, and we all expected to get through it and were expected to get through it. But that I never thought I would be in academia and like working for a college. So I can't even say it. It's really bizarre. So I've been having a lot of emotions about that. And really, it's, I don't know if I've come to the other side of it. I think I just have to sit with it and see how I feel when I start there, and also ground myself in knowing that, you know, I'm a good clinician, and if it doesn't work out, you know, there's plenty of work out in the community, or I can continue to seek work as a clinician. I may even want to do it as I'm in academia once I get my feet settled, you know, in it. But yeah, I just wanted to keep it real and say that I've been kind of worried and stressed and scared. Yeah.
My moment of triumph this week is, it's actually having a day yesterday where laundry was completed, shopping for the week was completed, all of the fruits and vegetables were washed, ready to be cooked. I went for a walk in the evening and sort of felt recovered from a very difficult week. So as I was washing vegetables yesterday, I was thinking like, oh, I'm spending my Saturday doing this. But then I thought, this is also a way of taking care of myself and mm-hmm. taking care of my partner, and just by having some mundane things that at the same time help me in, you know, are going to help me in the next couple of days, and it's going to make things a lot less stressful. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of come home ready to food that's there, that's ready for me to eat. And so I thought that was a moment of triumph, because I could have just given up on not doing any of that stuff and said, I had a horrible week, I am going to just not do mm-hmm. any of this stuff. And then I would have not felt ready and yeah. more cared for yeah. the week that's coming up.
That's a really good yeah. point. Self-care is really important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So self-care doesn't have to be expensive treats. It can also be like doing simple stuff that make life easier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So my birthday was yesterday.
And happy birthday.
The week before, like leading up to my birthday, I took the week off and had vacation, which was really nice. And I went to Tahoe for a few days, and it was just really good to get away, and like the air was all clear and fresh, and mm-hmm. it was just nice. And so, and I also like was really intentional about like, I'm going here to relax and restore and just like get some quiet time. So then when I was coming back to Oakland, I got back around 5 p.m. or something, and I was going to go to my gym class at 6 p.m. And as soon as I got to my class, I like instantly got irritated. And I had been so like cool and calm and happy for the last few days, and I just got irritated at these people. And I was like, oh my gosh, like how can I need to, that's not my intention. Like mm-hmm. I want to keep how I've been feeling. Mm-hmm. So it was some work to get back to the place that I wanted to be, like to kind of center and like focus on myself. Like, okay, I'm at the gym because I'm trying to get my workout on. Mm-hmm. And like, I, this feels good to me too. So I did that, and I got it together. And then yesterday on my actual birthday, I went to a dance class, and they had us go around and say an intention. And I was like, I need to work on sustaining my joy and happiness, and not letting that get taken away, or, yeah. you know, letting people or circumstances or situations steal it. So it felt good to say that out loud, like mm-hmm. with that group before the class. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to keep that for my 33rd year. Like, I really want to maintain my joy and my happiness this year. Mm-hmm. So that was my moment of triumph and moment of joy.
We need to yeah. do some like magic spells or something.
Right.
I know. We need to get our Bruja witchiness out here.
Protect your joy.
Protect your joy. Yeah, spell. That's an excellent point, because, you know, we take time for ourselves, and then we go out into the rest of the world, and the littlest thing can just ruin the wellness of the last few hours or the last couple of days. But what were they doing? I totally want to know.
I don't even want to get into all that. I'll tell you guys after.
But they were trying it. They were trying it. People are going to write and say, what were they doing?
I can't get into all that.
Another okay. podcast?
Yes.
Maybe.
Gyms and how annoying the ones never can be. Okay. Well, thank you, ladies. That was amazing. So yeah, we were on it. We, you know, earlier before we turned the mic on, we definitely had some stories about how difficult or how challenging it was to access higher education. And a couple of the articles that we were thinking about and reading sort of addressed the ivory tower, but also the fact that a lot of these systems that we have to attend were systems that were not set up by POC or folks like us. You know, as I look in our room, like, we weren't the founding people of the universities within many places on this earth. You know, we're talking about the United States specifically, but also Latin America and the influence of the Eurocentric way of thinking and being and understanding things and what you read. But first and foremost, you know, just kind of what it's like to even try and access higher education and what that means to folks who are trying to decolonize their minds at the same time. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, I'm thinking about not even just higher education, but just education in general. Yes. I've been watching that show Underground. I don't know if
you guys haven't watched it.
But it's about slavery, and it just like being reminded of how like they did not want people to learn, like to read, or like they didn't want there to be any access to education or knowledge, formal knowledge in that way, from like books or from reading, and how how deliberate the like cutting off of like information from people was, and so that extends or expands to like higher education, where like knowledge or information is more specific and detailed and like more in depth or whatever. Like there is, it's very strategic to like keep certain people from having information, and like what does that mean and why, and how knowledge or information is like associated with power, and if we have access to that. Yeah,
I completely, right now that you're talking about just basically systems, right? And we're indoctrinated in those systems as soon as we hit school grounds, you know? I mean, it's different for different communities, but I think, like, specifically, yeah, the only people that had access within the frame of this country to access schools were white males. And I think that continues to be the case. In a larger sense of who's being able to access education, who has established resources to go and actually be in school. There's a lot of things that prevent kids from learning. Just the K-12 education alone is so exhausting for kids. I remember getting to my freshman year and thinking, I'm fucking tired. You know, I'm tired of this. And then being expected to, like, learn yet another system that my parents definitely weren't aware of. They understood higher education in the fact that it was important, but they had never sat in a college classroom or, you know, really they had never attended a college, period. So the amount of support that I got from my family, it was there, but it looked differently than it did when I was younger. And it kind of made for a lonelier experience for me when I first got there, because I really didn't know what the hell was going on. And I didn't have sisters or brothers or cousins who had gone through it and could break it down to me and give me a little bit of game before starting. I was basically it at that point. And so I felt kind of lost. I felt like depressed. And I knew that I needed to learn a certain way of talking and being in order to be taken seriously. And that in and of itself was already placed on me since high school. And it was exhausting.
Yeah. So the experience of education was for you one that just created exhaustion, like how to really move through that world and survive that world.
Yeah. I remember finding a room, at Cal, and it was like a random room in the student center, but it had couches. And I remember the first couple of weeks of school that I started that, I would just go in there and take a nap all by myself. Nobody knew. I didn't know where, like, I just went there. I didn't have community, nothing. And I would just like take a nap and like feel just kind of alone, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting, Asia, with some of the pieces that you said. This idea that knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. And I think that certainly, I mean, I don't know if this is your case, Cynthia, but certainly I was raised with that premise in a way. Even the little pieces that I share on my calling today have some... has a flavor of that you go to school, that you get educated, that you try to prioritize higher education, before like getting married or having family, mm-hmm. or because that's what gives you like a security, right? Like that power and security can also be related to each other, mm-hmm. and yet there's also this other part of it that sometimes, you know, people of color, we join the higher education world, but we're not granted that same power or that access. Yeah. Not because we just get there means that we're also getting access to this elite group of, you know, powerful people, you know. And so there's kind of like that contradiction in it, in a way, because yes, like you get to go to grad school or you get to go to college, and I remember being told like that's what you need to do, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, this is what guarantees you something for you, you know. And yet then there's like all the complexities around what it is for people of color to be in college, in mm-hmm. those spaces, in yeah. higher ed, and that actually are, in a way, continued experiences of oppression and microaggressions and, like, all sorts of, yeah. you know, different ways in which we also have to survive the academia, kind of mm-hmm. like how we were talking, Cynthia, that,
yeah.
you know, the exhaustion that comes from that.
Yeah.
I think that, I had a similar experience where I grew up kind of just knowing that that was the path I was mm-hmm. supposed to take, mm-hmm. like, always. Like, I didn't even know there was another way that existed, that you could, mm-hmm. like, start your own business or you could mm-hmm. go to the mill. I didn't know anything other than, like, you go to college. But I think that there are some kids who don't grow up with that yeah. that message, and even the way that we're calling like college or going to university higher education, that implies that it's higher than yeah. other
privileged.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. a privileged way yeah. of learning or mm-hmm. information, and that only some kids, you know, get the message that they get to go to higher mm-hmm. ed, and then other kids don't. Mm-hmm. Some families or teachers like give messages to students mm-hmm. that they're not good enough for that. They don't deserve that. They wouldn't do well mm-hmm. in that. And so, like, what does that mean if you're getting the message that you don't deserve to go and be higher with these other people mm-hmm. or be smart, as if, like, other ways of knowing or yeah. other types of information, the less privileged types of information or ways of learning, like, that's not also mm-hmm. intelligence, because yeah. There are lots of different types of intelligence, yeah. but we privilege this higher ed mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. And for some people, like, that's cool. Like, for me, that's cool. Like, I learned well in that way. Mm-hmm. And so I went on to go to college. But how does that impact the kids who are a lot of our clients, like, who don't get that message.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, as you were talking, both of you, I was thinking about essentially what you both are saying. It's like, knowledge is power, but what knowledge in this place that we're in is given power, right? And mm-hmm. it's a specific type of knowledge and a specific way of knowing how to get through the world. And if you don't learn that or figure it out, then you know, you're not given access to certain things. But really, our communities had vast amount of knowledge and vast amount of richness without this Eurocentric idea of what education is, right? And I think through slavery and colonization, we've been told that this is the type of knowledge. And actually, you have to know it, unfortunately, in some ways to get through certain systems, right? Like this type of classroom knowledge, right? You were talking about street smarts earlier, Asia. That's really important. Maria, you talk about like knowing about like dance and like different types of cultural aspects of our communities that ground us, right? And that's not what we're taught in schools. And then when we are taught something like that, it's usually been appropriated by a white person, brought in and packaged as something new, you know, when really, like, had we been allowed to acculturate and not forced to assimilate, maybe some of our traditions, you know, would be, and our ways of thinking, our narratives would be more common in these white walls, these white spaces that we've been talking about. But that's just not the case, you know, and so, you know, the privileging happens to the ones that learn how to play the game in a certain way, and other folks learn how to play the game in other ways to survive outside of that sort of percentage that gets to that, those walls, you know, those elusive walls that for some kids, it's just like, it's not even something, their parents may even been thinking about it, but the way that the school structure is made, it's not made for how they learn.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, so we know, like we've been talking about systems, but also we wanted to talk about like personal stuff. Like what was it like for us to access college, right? university and what it, you know, what it does mean in certain communities.
Mm-hmm. I'm still kind of thinking of what you were talking mm-hmm. about before you just asked this question, mm-hmm. but how it, and knowledge as power, and how like the stripping away of, mm-hmm. it's a stripping away of power if you make mm-hmm. knowledge, this type of knowledge associated with power, and that's the only way to mm-hmm. access it. And so now like emotional intelligence mm-hmm. or ancestral wisdom or all of those things are totally like just nothing. It like decreases your chances of survival or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it's just connected to things that are really, deep. Like, it's mm-hmm. not just about like going to college and, you know, how do we survive once we get there? But like, what are the real impacts of this? If you feel like you don't, your own internal, the wisdom of your bones or like the wisdom mm-hmm. of your ancestors is irrelevant or like mm-hmm. that's not useful to you and your people anymore, even though it is, but if you're told that it's not, and the only way to have something valuable is to go that way, but you can't go that way or you mm-hmm. can't survive that way, you can't be successful in college, then it just leaves you kind of helpless.
Yes.
Well, it is almost like another, mm-hmm. It's an enactment of colonization in a way, you know, like you have to leave your stuff out and then join this other place to become basically white, mm-hmm. right? Like to learn about whiteness, to learn about, you know, all these ways mm-hmm. or appropriated mm-hmm. forms of other like mm-hmm. quote unquote knowledges. But it's, you know, it almost feels like another form of colonization, right? Like that you get stripped away from mm-hmm. what's yours mm-hmm. and then you have to then assimilate to mm-hmm. this other, you know, culture that is not yours, white culture, mm-hmm. whiteness, you know, mm-hmm. Like you were saying, who started universities and colleges and for whom, mm-hmm. you know, white Christian men,
yeah.
you know, that. And so, I mean, it is the thread in a way that holds all, you know, like it's entrenched in all of it. Yeah. It's like embedded in white supremacy.
Absolutely.
And class, you know, and mm-hmm. like you know, the piece around like, what are the knowledges that are mm-hmm. valued, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I keep thinking of one of my advisors in grad school, and she was saying, you know, you start off with your coffee black, and you know, as the time goes by, you add some cream, and then maybe you add a little bit more cream, and then you add even more cream, and then all of a sudden all you have is cream, and you don't want that to happen to you. But it makes me think of, I mean, it could be a sort of this analogy that you can think of, or a metaphor for what you can think of as a POC, just being in this country, you know, forced through slavery or through colonization, what it is that we go through in order to be able to survive and get through our days. It looks differently, I think, for a POC and within this constraint of the United States and all its history. And, you know, it can be very depressing. It can also be funny though. I mean, we were laughing a little earlier of some of the experiences we had in undergrad, and it's like,
were we?
Kind of, well, oh. We were laughing with Asia about some of the ridiculousness, you know, of what you're put through.
Well, so, I mean, that's making me want to ask, I feel like we're focusing a lot on the challenges mm-hmm. of being a person of color who wants to experience college or university, graduate school. So, I mean, like, why? What's the purpose? Like, why do we... Why is it useful or necessary for us if it's so challenging or if it leads to assimilation or if it's mm-hmm. a part of colonization? Why are we doing it? Because mm-hmm. I mean, I think that there are good things about going to college too, and I mean, I think it's important for us to talk about that. Like, why have we been subjecting ourselves to it, and how are the ways that we survived it? Mm-hmm. Like, because
yes, because mm-hmm. we all went to grad school in this room, yeah, so <right. laughs> we did subject ourselves to
and
it.
And I wouldn't
time.
Take it back mm-hmm. as well for myself. Yeah. I think my journey through college and graduate school, it's a little different from both of you, given that mm-hmm. I migrated to the U.S. after I had finished college in Puerto Rico, and I went to the University of Puerto Rico, and it's a public institution. So back when I was there, it was way more affordable than what it is now. And so for me, actually, the process of, and maybe this is similar to people here in the U.S., I'm not trying to say that this is particular to people outside of the U.S., but for me, my experience in going to the University of Puerto Rico was a foundation of the person that mm-hmm. I am today. Mm-hmm. It was something that completely made me see the world in such a complex and vast way that I, just from understanding, from a political perspective, you know, from understanding the history of my country, the, the impact of colonization in my country, I began to learn about gender oppression and racism and our histories as a Caribbean nation, all of the sudden, what felt very small for me just expanded into this, you know, huge perspective that it's been one of the most transformational experiences that I've had, you know, to develop that critical way of thinking about the world mm-hmm. and the capacity and the opportunities to continue to critique it while you're there, mm-hmm. I was a psychology major back then and to think about what, you know, like how, like to, for me to be able to also develop a sense of like, it's so interesting. We're in this like super critical space about colonization and about the world. And here we are trying to learn how to pathologize people, right? Mm-hmm. And to like have room to ask those questions and to sit with that. And for many reasons that I probably can talk some other time, I end up coming to San Francisco to do my graduate school, primarily because at that time in my life, I started to get really interested in the experience of the body as also as part of our psychological process. And I came here and all of the sudden I came into a private school where I remember my mom telling me like, just take loans, you'll be fine. And like, I would see like the number of like my loans and I would like have all this big anxiety because, I come from a value and also like a family history that and with it, and I know that's been challenged currently in Puerto Rico, but that education like was free, you know, like, mm-hmm. or very, very, very cheap, you know, and still some people could not access it, right? And all of that because of, like, not everyone can pay mm-hmm. what, you know, even the what it was back yeah. then. But so for me, it was a shift. And then to experience all sorts of other things coming here, I feel like I'm getting a little lost. But I think that my journey, because at that time, that's when I started to say, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
You know, when I came to graduate school here, that's when I started to think, what the hell is going on? Mm-hmm. You know, like, what's this world? Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely not, doesn't feel at all like the experience that I just had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love what you guys are talking about. And I don't know too much to say. I love your question, Asia, because I think that it's so interesting. In that I was describing my freshman year and sort of also saying in my brain, like, and yet school feels very comfortable to me sometimes. And it feels very warm and fuzzy, you know, as grad school too felt warm and fuzzy as well. Because, yeah, you know, I was raised with those ideas that education was very important. And also, too, like Maria was talking about, in Guatemala, and La Universidad de San Carlos is like the equivalent to UC Berkeley here, is free. And so my parents were like, oh, there's a UC Berkeley in California? That's where she's going to go, you know? And then coming to realize, like, oh, wait, it's expensive, you know? It's not the same as over there where you might just have to pay for your books, you know? No, there's tuition here. So it's not really what they originally started with in the States or in California, was to have high quality education that was accessible to folks and cheaper than like private universities. But now, you know, places like UC Berkeley, the UCs, the States are getting as expensive as private universities. It's kind of crazy. So even that is being lost, you know, in terms of access. But I think, like, for me, it was undergrad where the reason that it became such a monumental part in my life also was because I came to a lot of political awareness, and I joined groups that organized and did activism on campuses and off campus, and then had me go into a field where I was working with immigrant communities and thinking about policy and working around changing the system. And so those ideas came to me more when I was in undergrad at Cal. Like, that's when I was thinking, learning to think critically, and also thinking, like, how can we dismantle, take apart some of these systems? It's really fucking hard. And, you know, I can't say that a lot has changed. In fact, with this administration, it feels like we really regressed. But it was the place that planted those ideas, and also the history of my parents coming from countries that fought against, you know, certain ideas of capitalism. And in many ways, you know, are still fighting that. But it, you know, college can be really helpful, and it is a place where I do feel comfortable. And also, like, I wish it made more people feel comfortable. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that, I felt comfortable enough in college too. But there are ways in which, like, you sometimes have to find comfort or, like, mm-hmm. find support. And, like, in grad school especially, like, something that really helped me was that there was a students of color group. Like, there were not a lot of students of color at all, but there was a group, and I felt really safe there, and I, like, really kind of took refuge in that space and, like, went to all the meetings and became mm-hmm. friends with people in that group, because I really needed that. And I valued the education that I was getting there because I knew what my intention was of, like, getting the education. I think that's important too. Like, if you're going to go to college or pursue, like, graduate school or whatever, to, like, know what your intention mm-hmm. is. Like, if you're on some respectability politics, like, I'm going to go to college because that'll make me seem, then maybe, like, to really think about, like, why you're doing this, or, like, mm-hmm. what's your purpose. And some people really want to be scholars of a particular mm-hmm. subject, or they're really passionate about something and want to be experts, or really want to help in a way that, you know, requires going to college, and that's why I went. Like, I really wanted to be trained to kind of, like, better my innate skills as, like, a person who wants to hold space for healing. Like, I wanted to learn how to do that. And so I also, like, don't regret going to college and going to grad school. I think it was important. It was hard, but I do think, like, figuring out, like, well, how do I manage here? And I remember the film Black Psychoanalysts Speak. There's one part where one of the guys talks about being, like, one of the only Black men in his graduate program and doing a study about that or something, and finding that something that was really important for, like, Black people in academia is to be a pioneer. And so that meant, like, being able to, like, find support. Yeah. And so that you can sustain yourself, because you are going to be, like, one of the only ones. And he said that in his program. It started off with, like, more Black people, but many of them dropped out because they couldn't sustain that pioneer status or whatever. But that's, like, a necessary thing that you have to take on as a Black person. And so I don't know, there are all kinds of things that are more challenging and different that you have to, like, figure out as a Black person or as a POC. But it's possible. And if you have, like, if you have a purpose for doing it, then you figure it out.
I think support is key. Were you going to say something, Maria?
I was kind of, I am, like, sitting with a question that's part related to my ignorance around the histories of students here in the U.S. I do think that there is definitely a lot of history around students' activism in the U.S., but I'm thinking about the University of Puerto Rico, where I come from, currently what's happening there right now, where the state and also the United States it's like attacking that space by basically proposing so many budget cuts to it, like $500 million, that will leave the university not able to operate anymore, or then it would have to be privatized. And there's like the students have basically just are saying no, this is not going to happen, and we're going to defend the university, and stepping in with, like, a mostly women-led movement, you know, that it's like protecting the university, and, like, you know, the campus is locked down, it's like a major strike right now. And I was thinking that there are parts of college and of education that can also be dangerous to power, you know, it's under threat. And so, you know, what are those parts of going to college, you know, of going to higher ed, that are actually places that are a threat to power, you know, and a threat to money and to capitalism, and that actually, because they want poor people and people of color to stay in particular marginalized conditions, right, and not learn, and not, you know, when there are places where there is some access to this and people start coming to college and are able to go, then they become dangerous places too. You know, and yes, what you get taught, that's also problematic, and there's a level of dismantling that needs to happen around that, but there is some truth to that idea that knowledge is power as well. And so, like, it's just so like, it's just so complicated. It's like, there's so many pieces to it, you know?
Yeah, it's complicated, because I think when you were talking, Maria, what came to mind for me was, much in, like, a lot of institutions that we've seen in this country, it's like, folks are allowed on the campus if they learn the system and they're not trying to rock the boat, right? Sometimes. However, that doesn't happen all the time, especially with POC groups on campus. We have to figure out ways of, like, you know, protesting and activism, like we've seen lately. at UC Berkeley when they've tried to have super right, conservative, crazy, racist people come on campus and spew their hate speech. You know, people got active and went on campus and said no. You know, but at the same time, it does become dangerous to the establishment, right? Mm-hmm. So you have all these folks that are saying, you know, we need free education or we need more POC professors or we need more spaces for Black folks or we need more scholarships or we need more access to education or why are you co-opting our communities, you know, and using them in labs and trying to learn from us instead of having us, you know, the community come here, right? There's a lot of that that's going on. And I really think that the system blank, it's just not set up for people to want to dismantle the system. It's set up for people to get through it, to uphold it in some way, you know, and none of us are exempt from that. I'm not saying I'm not doing that as well, but it really is a way of upholding it. And so, I mean, for me, it's like, how do we change these systems of higher education or higher learning, even like our internships, right? I'm sitting here and I'm thinking like, we all had to do some sort of internship or get hours. We all had to do, well, Asia and I had to do pre-doc, post-doc, all that free labor, you know, and you're subjugated all the time. And the message that you get is like, you need to toe the line. You don't want to rock the boat here because you need your hours. You don't want to get written up. You want to get known as that problem student, you know. And I've known some POC who've gotten really treated quite badly in those systems as well, and kind of labeled the problem student. You know, how do we fight back on that? Like, what is it? I mean, I know part of our thing is like to sit here and think about it together. But in terms of action, like, what do we do?
I just really think that support, like having people, yeah. having mm-hmm. other people, having a mentor, like mentorship is really important. To if there is only one POC professor or something, like try to build a relationship with them or like try to find an mm-hmm. ally. I think that was a really important part of my mm-hmm. experience. Mm-hmm. What else?
No, I think that that's a really good idea. You know what you just said about the mentorship? I went to APA conference last year uh-huh. and there was a panel of psychologists, all POC, talking about mentoring and how they love doing it, but then even though they taught in the grad school, they were actually asked to mentor undergrad students also because there weren't any mm-hmm. undergrad professors. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, mm-hmm. so it feels like it's always exhausting for us.
Yeah, it's, I was just reminded of this article I read online. I mentioned to you, all of you, mm-hmm. when we were talking before we started recording, it's an article on a blog or website mm-hmm. called This Bridge Called Our Health.
Oh yeah.
And mm-hmm. like there's a little article there that speaks that has some tips for women of color surviving mm-hmm. academia. Mm-hmm. And
let's hear them.
Well, the first one is love and accept love from other women of color. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of what you were saying yeah. that find a mentor or find other people of color. It almost, the fact that I'm even saying find right. another person of color, it's like, go search for it, you know, I know, speaks to that reality and also the importance of creating community amongst other people of color. Mm-hmm. I remember, like you, when I was here in graduate school, that's, you know, the first time that I heard this whole thing about people of color. I had never heard that yeah. before. But then there was this group and we got together and we talked about ways to deal with it. When what triggered the creation of that group was an article that a white professor gave on one of his classes that was racist mm-hmm. And, you know, like, that created this movement, you know, where, you know, now we were meeting together and we were doing, you know, thinking together and supporting each other. And it felt different than being, like, the one person of color in the class mm-hmm. to then go to this group where it's, like, 30 of you, you know, and yes, it's you're not together all the time, but coming together in those moments felt important because it resourced me when I would go back to the classroom again, where I was the only one.
What are the other points it says too?
So the second one, and let me just really give
props.
Yeah, to so this is written by a woman called Karen B. Hanna. And it's on this website called This Bridge Called Our Health. And the second tip she gives is notice those who show solidarity with you and reciprocate when they need you.
That means in meetings and in classrooms when people are talking out the side of their mouth and you got to step in. Yeah,
I think, and also what she's referring here to is around solidarity, because these spaces can also be very competitive.
Yeah,
you know, like academia can be a place where you can, because it's so connected to power, right? Like there's like this process that you need to like, you need to gain access, and then what happens to us people of color, right? Like when there's like the one person that gets there, like you were saying, this pioneer thing, right? And so solidarity is important, you know, like how do we lift each other and not fight each other, or
it's so, I'm thinking of that quote by Audre Lorde, that the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. And how, like, I think college does, or, you know, education has a good, like, built-in infrastructure for organizing. Like, there are people that, young people there, or whatever people there who are there, and you got, and people can come together and be together, but it is, like, I'm tired of calling it higher education, but,
what
like,
do we say? Just graduate school?
Graduate school, college.
It's so elitist, that word, that concept.
It is. And what was I going to say? The competitive part of it does make people think of themselves as, like, individual and, like, I'm doing this for me or I'm getting this degree. But that's, you know, that's the master's tool. And so, like, kind of, like, taking that perspective of, like, well, what... How can I have a more collective experience and be in solidarity? And like, if I'm here and I have access to this college, this information, like, how can I share that with other people who don't have access? Or how can I also like integrate other ways of knowing with this information that I'm learning from this college? Like, I think we should always be thinking about like, as who we are, as a person of whatever we are, like, how do we stay true to ourselves and like our communities and what we're trying to do, and not get sucked into the institution's way of wanting you to be. And I don't even know if we can necessarily dismantle systems like that, or if that's even our job, but I think we can make use of them, take from them like what we can, like what's useful for us, and then don't take the stuff that's not useful for us. And I think a lot of times, I know it was a big learning experience for me to not take on stuff that's not mine. Like, trying to dismantle that whole white supremacist, capitalist, whatever structure, like, I can't, that's not my work. They need to do it because they built it. I'm just going to take the information that I can from them and bring what's useful back to my community, integrate it with the information I'm learning from my community, and have that more of that mindset, because that's also protective. I don't get caught up in suffering and like getting so frustrated and irritated and mad. I can just stay on my own path of like, okay, I'm here to learn this stuff and then get out.
Peace.
Yeah.
Should I read more stuff?
What? How much time?
Yeah, so we are on our, we've been talking for 50 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay, so we're coming up on
there's
some time.
There's a lot of, but I mean, yeah, I think that there's like, people can check this out. It's, you know, a great article, and it shares the author shares about her own experience in academia and the impact that that had on her, and
we can share it on the Facebook page.
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, and it's a blog called This Bridge Called Our Health, Living Beyond Survival, 11 Tips for Women of Color in Academia by Karen Hanna.
Mm-hmm. And I would say it's not just even in academia. I think it's like in life in general, in our professional lives, at work, whatever we do for work, sustainability is really important. And I really like that sort of idea that you guys were talking about, the collective experience and solidarity, I think is super important in whatever you do. Yeah. You know,
that's a big piece that's coming for this current struggle that's happening in Puerto Rico right now, because it's the end of May, yeah. Right? So it's the end of the semester, and there's definitely a lot of people that could maybe were graduating in May, but the university right now, it's closed. Like the students have closed down the gates, yeah. And have camped out there, and like this is part of the way they are, you know, they have demands that want to be met, and one of them is that we're not going to let the university be stolen from us
and become privatized,
mm-hmm. And so, but you know, there's like this group of students that have even gone to the courts to sue the university because they are going to lose their semester, or because they are not going to be able to graduate. Mm-hmm. While there are others that are saying, I was supposed to graduate, yet I cannot live with the sense that mm-hmm. I will graduate and then this is not going to be available for others that mm-hmm. are coming after me. Mm-hmm. So stand in solidarity mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. not just the people that are there right now, but also the future, you know, generation and the future of a country in that way. You know, if this is like the little resources that mm-hmm. are accessible and that are free, not free, they're not free, mm-hmm. but like, you know, for people to be able to go to school.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, solidarity is a big one that it's not easy sometimes
to make those choices. No, it's not. Yeah. Because sometimes you give up something
mm-hmm. yeah.
in order to help the larger.
And it's not about individuality.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's not about that. I think that we could sort of start wrapping up now, unless you both have thoughts. Mm-hmm. I also want to mention, but any closing thoughts before we wrap up the discussion? I mean, I think that the two biggest things that, and if I could recall, in my experiences, is definitely community. Having some community to get through those spaces is what both of you have been saying is really important. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, like thinking, how can we challenge those disproportionate, like, systems that exist so that we can make it more accessible if that's what other folks want, you know?
Yeah. I would say to really think about why you're making a decision to go to college or to graduate mm-hmm. school. And, like, I'm thinking about my little brother, for example, who's been questioning going to graduate school. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like, because I might not get a job, you know, a good job if I don't, or stuff like that. And if your decision is about like fear or like fear of not having something, or like mm-hmm. a scarcity mindset or something, I don't know, to just think about those things. Or if it's about like, because I really want to know this stuff. Like, I'm really into this, mm-hmm. this subject or this information. I think to just, like, know for yourself, like, why you're making the decision mm-hmm. to go is really important and can really kind of guide your experience. And you will know that it's possible to do it. And you'll feel more, like, you will want to do it mm-hmm. if you have, like, a good intention or goal around doing it. Like, I think it's less... I can't think of the word, but you're more likely to like stay engaged in the process even when it gets hard, and you can use like those tips from the article to stay engaged if it's something that's really important to you.
Yeah, I think that anxiety that you mentioned is really important. I certainly have a couple friends who are doing very well for themselves, and they're chefs. They didn't go to college. They trained in restaurants and worked in farmers markets and built their community that would come and eat their food, and now they're doing really well in their restaurant businesses. So I think that that's really, I think fear does guide a lot of decisions in our world, and I think if we can prevent some of that from our decisions, I know anxiety is really hard to quell sometimes in order to make decisions, but I think that's good advice, is to really wonder why you want to go, because going to more school, like moving on to grad school or even college, it doesn't necessarily mean you'll make more money or, you know, I definitely have a lot of debt in comparison to what I'll be. Right.
I mean, honestly,
I saw a meme, you guys. It was funny. It said, why all these people talking about what they're going to do when they retire, and I'm here and I'm over here thinking about I'm gonna have to work until right before my funeral starts. Oh,
that's not funny.
I thought it was funny because I was like, oh shit, is that gonna be me?
Me too.
So yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think I would, I guess after sitting with both of you thinking about this, when we were considering this topic, I was like, yeah, I mean, I don't know what, you know, and it just took a while for me to sit down with sort of what I think for me has been a really transformative experience and also a really, I was going to use the word traumatic, but I don't want to like use that word. Also a very challenging and difficult experience, especially once I moved here. And so I guess what I want to say is that it's complex, and it's a bag of mixed things, you know, and I kind of want to circle back to your moment of triumph or challenge this week, Asia, where you were talking about how do you kind of protect yourself from the, not you personally, but one does protect yourself from taking something away by all the oppression that's out there. I made assumptions. You didn't say what it was, but I'm thinking about like, how do you protect your magic, you know, while you're going to school, while you're going to graduate school, while you're trying to survive what are primarily white spaces, and how do you find the pockets that are there that resourced you, and you know, whether it is taking a course that's taught by a person of color, or joining groups, or talking to other people of color, or because there are actually places where that can be dismantling and kind of revolutionary, you know, in the process of being in school as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a shame that we have to find those. Like, it's almost like, where is whatever, like those like pictures, like where's Waldo or something like that, you know? And that's part of the problem. And at the same time, those spaces, those pockets can be actually really, really valuable.
Did you say protect your magic?
I did say that.
I love it. Hashtag protect your magic.
And that can be applied to anything, not just to school.
Yeah, exactly. I really like that. So everyone, protect your magic, figure out a way to find community, check out the Facebook page, because we're going to put that article on there. And also, I just wanted to invite folks to let us know what you're thinking. What are your thoughts on our topic for this week? You can go on our Facebook page, Dismantled, and write us a message or even put a post up, because we'd love to hear your thoughts. I know that we just had a couple episodes come out. We had the Blackout episode come out, and then we have the Latinx episode that just came out this week. So please, if you're catching up, check those out. And I wanted to shout out, I shouted him out in the Latinx episode, but I wanted to shout him out on our episode because I was just on a panel a week ago, I think. And this young Asian brother came up to me and was like, yo, I love Dismantled. It's so amazing. I love you guys. Y'all are funny.
Thank you.
Yeah. He was like, y'all are funny. I mean, I don't think you're funny. He's like, but he said, you know, your topics are serious, but you find humor in it. And he really loves listening to the Dismantled podcast. So I thought that was really, really cool of him to come up to me and say that. And so shouting him out. And I think that, you know, I know we would love to hear from all of you. And we're not yet hearing from all of you. So.
We're hearing from some of you.
Yeah, some of you, yes. But definitely go on our page. And with that, we're going to ground ourselves in our words that we always leave with. And I can start with love.
Discourse.
Solidarity.
Liberation. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.